tracks around Australia. Here's Inside Motorsport.
Hi, I'm Peter Norton.
I'm Craig Revelle. Thanks for joining us once again on Inside Motorsport. Formula One has returned to Hungary. In Budapest is the BBC's Jonathan Ledger.
Choose a superlative and then multiply. Motor Racing's answer to Man United ran rings around the opposition with startling simplicity. Schumacher needed half the laps and yet looked twice as quick, almost a second better than David Coulthard, who finished on the front row for the first time in nearly 3 months. Mindful of Hakkinen's charge past Schumacher into the first corner last year, McLaren will be in no mood to concede the championship just yet. But the Millennium Celebration, scheduled to bring Budapest to a standstill this weekend, will surely run to a red carpet in the event of Schumacher claiming victory and his fourth world crown. Last year's winner, Hakkinen, ended up only sixth, well beaten by Barrichello, Ralf Schumacher and Jarno Trulli. Jaguar and Benetton, with improved aerodynamics, both nursed dreams of a top 10 place. Both were disappointed. Irvine 14th and Jenson Button, battling two engine failures, 17th.
So it was a very confident Michael Schumacher at the driver debriefing.
Yes. No, I mean, we predicted certain lap times and we went much further than we thought, honestly. And it was down to really having a perfect lap done. The car was sorted out in the morning just fantastically, 100%, and couldn't have been better, honestly.
You only did two runs, so you only did six laps, you used two sets of tyres. How important is it to save tyres for the race?
It was not so much about saving tyres, honestly. It's simply when you feel you have done the maximum and there is nothing you can do on the car and nothing you can do on your own side, then you simply sit and wait. I mean, there is no point in wasting efforts, and that's what we've done. Just saved our energy.
Thank you, Michael. David, on both your final two runs, you were fast in the first sector, but then the second sector it seems disappeared. Did the truck go off towards the end of the session?
No, in the third run, I ran a little bit wide with the tyre configuration that I ran. I picked up more understeer than I expected through the fast corner. I think it's turn 9 out the back. So I pretty much lost that lap. And on the last lap, just generally not quite as tidy throughout that midsection. I'm not sure if it was so much the track going off or just where I was at that time with the tyres.
Now, your first run was a loss when you came up against Heinz Harald Frentzen again. Are you two magnetically attracted in qualifying?
No, it's been a long time. It was Belgium last year. It was the last time we came together. But I think that it happens sometimes that you get traffic and one incident is you have to expect in a track like this. But I was a little frustrated because he went literally at cruising speed through the first corner. And I feel that his team should be giving him the information. You know, the team manager or his engineer should be able to tell him, okay, Heinz, a car just passed start finish, you know. Our team certainly do that, and that's what's frustrating, that other people don't have the same level of professionalism.
Hi, David. Rubens, disappointed to be third?
In a way, yes, because I think the car felt very, very good in the morning. And, my first run was quite good. The second run was coming even better, and then I had traffic. And since then, I lost the balance of the car, basically. I had too much understeer out there, and I couldn't set the time anymore. I mean, together with the fact that, I think the track was a little bit dirtier, and, it was just a plus-plus. Starting third in Hungary is not too bad, but I think the car was capable of doing better, even because I was much closer to Michael all the sessions.
Now, is your aim for tomorrow just to, between you, Martin himself, score enough points to secure the Constructors' Championship for Ferrari?
Drive as fast as I can. If I can win the race and Michael can secure his championship, I think we're going to win both.
Hey, Rubens. Michael, that was a very calm and collected qualifier. Will you be as calm for the race when a win means you're world champion again?
Obviously we will try, but be sure it will not be as calm as what we have seen in qualifying. We've seen very often this year in qualifying that we got it together, but the race was much tighter. So I do expect a very tight race, a very competitive race from Rubens from DC. So I guess the spectators will going to see a good show tomorrow. Anyway, we want to secure the championship if possible down here. But before we can do that, we need the 10 points.
Britain's Justin Wilson is just 1 point away from wrapping up the Formula 3000 Championship with his win in Budapest yesterday. Mark Webber, the Australian driver, was on the front row outside of Justin Wilson from the start, but unfortunately the dirty line saw him shuffle back to fourth place, and then an altercation firstly with Thomas Eng running into his side pod and damaging the car saw Webber eventually moving up into third position. Whilst trying to take second position, he was unfortunately spun and put an end to his proceedings. Wilson's win now means that he needs to only score 1 point from the remaining two races in the championship. The next run is at Spa-Francorchamps, and it should be a race that Webber will be keen to put up in the win column. Truckee Speedway was the venue for last weekend's IRL action. Here's how the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Network saw the finish.
Buddy Lazier, the differential this time is 14 hundredths of a second as they deal with the lap car in turn number one. Buddy Lazier has now opened up on lap 198, a two-car length lead. They're on the back straight.
Not a lot of folks sitting down back here. I'm sure the same on the front straightaway. Buddy Lazier stretched it out. Maybe a five, maybe a six, maybe a seven car length.
And out of fuel.
Buell's in puddle, and here goes Scott Sharp around him.
It looks like Robbie Buell is out of fuel. He has broken off the fight, and what a way for Robbie Buell staying to end. White flag lap. We've got another car. Jeff Ward flowing on the front straight. White flag lap. It is Buddy Lazier looking to win for the fourth time in five races on the back straight.
Buddy Lazier, he's told me before the race, oh, I'd love to defend my title. Mike King, he's going to get it. He's in three coming at you, buddy.
Dale Colorado's Buddy Lazier is the hottest open wheel racer in all the land, but cool as a cucumber, and he takes the checkered flag, bringing it right up against the outside wall in the tri-oval. Buddy Lazier has trimmed the points lead even further on Sam Hornish Jr., who finishes fourth.
And Mike King, Buddy Lazier, what a run he has been on. After Indy, he has been almost untouchable.
This team has not finished out of the top five since the May 27th running of the Indianapolis 500, and they have won four now of the last six.
Yeah.
They have won four of the six events that have been run since Indy, and four of the last five that we have raced.
What a beautiful day. Just beautiful. I never won two races in a row before, you know, back-to-back year-wise. We won here last year, and we won now. Feel like we got a pretty good grasp on this place, so I like Kentucky a lot, and it's great. It's been great to us. Our Tybo Coors Light cars, it's really on fire. Yeah, we're having a brilliant second half of the year. I got a great team. I don't know what to tell you. They give me everything I need, and we work so well together, you know. And racing Indy cars isn't easy, you know. You got to constantly work to make yourself and your car better, and that's what we were doing. We were here late last night. I when I left, there was nobody around, and it was just me and my team around. So there were only a couple other teams working. So we worked late. We work hard for this, and well deserved for my team.
I don't recall seeing a driver get on a roll quite like this and sustain it for this long. Scott Sharp, on the other hand, wound up second.
Well, we got some points. That was good. We kept, you know, keeping it close. Those guys have just been running, you know, like a clock all year, both Sam and Buddy. So we're having a hard time trying to catch back up to them. But, you know, great job with the Delphi guys. They just gave me great pit stops. They kept us in the race, really. Just kept, you know, the first half of the race we had an untouchable car, and it seemed like it just went away a little bit. Not sure what happened. It got rougher a little bit over the bumps, and we could run 2:13.5 on our own early in the race. And at the end, you know, I'm drafting two guys in front of me side by side, the best track you can get, and I can't even run a 2:12. So not exactly sure what happened, but we're real pleased with the team, and we got some good points and gave Delphi some good exposure.
Now there are some charges of blocking with...
Well, whenever they don't win, they always whine.
Jim Frudenberg and company down there in the Kelly Racing Pit, I guess, have to be fairly happy with a second-place finish, despite the fact that they led a ton of laps.
Well, we were hoping they'd chase us the last half of the race, too, but got a little bumpy out there, had a couple sets of tires that... weren't real good over the bumps, and other than that, he had a great run all day.
Buddy Lazier is the winner of the Belterra Casino Indy 300. He has won four of the last five events on the Indy Racing Northern Light Series schedule. He is in victory lane once again. He has trimmed the lead that at one time for Sam Hornish Jr. was over 60, I believe 90 points. He has now trimmed it, JP, to 25 points heading to Gateway, and now... Even though I'm sure they have all the confidence in the world in their young driver, who has just posted another top three finish, the Panther team, the Pennzoil Panther guys, have to be feeling the pressure big time.
You know, it's really disappointing to have to go out there and race against guys that, you know, you try to get underneath them and they just move around on you.
you know, and if the rules aren't going to be enforced, then I guess I'll start doing it too.
Strong words there from Sam Hornish Jr. and Alan Sir Jr. with a good run, fourth place.
Well, I just want to thank the Gallus crew. They're the ones. I mean, the Gallus team, they passed more cars today than I think anybody did, and it was a great... It was a great effort on their part. You know, the super fat car was working awfully good, but I just owe this fourth place to my crew.
A fast race here somewhere in the neighborhood of 168, 170 miles an hour. Buddy Lazier, for the second year in a row, has won at Kentucky Speedway, and he's won four of the last five in the Indy Racing Northern Light Series. The differential going to Gateway will be 25 points.
Welcome to the Honda Champ Car Update. I'm Jim Murphy. Join me now as we make a visit to the fast-paced world of the kart series. Let's go to the videotape. In a virtual replay of last year's race, Elio Castroneves led Gilles Deferrin to the line to capture the win in the Miller Lite 200 at Mid-Ohio. The weekend got off to a rather bizarre start as PacWest race cars never took to the track on Friday. A contract dispute between PacWest and Toyota prevented Toyota from providing the engine electronics to PacWest. PacWest owner Bruce McCall was allegedly upset that while his rookie driver Scott Dixon was the highest Toyota-powered car in the championship hunt, he was the only Toyota-powered team actually paying for his engines. However, late on Friday afternoon, the announcement was made that the issue had been settled and that PacWest would return to the track on Saturday. When Saturday arrived, it was a case of qualifying deja vu as Gilles Deferrin took the pole with his Marlboro Team Penske teammate Elio Castroneves alongside in the front row, just as they had been in the year 2000. And just as they did last year, Deferrin led the race until the first pit stop, where Castroneves was able to grab the advantage and never look back. Part of what got Castroneves' lead was a blazing fast in-lap on nearly empty tanks, but that didn't come without some drama.
No, the Autoball was a fantastic job from all Team Penske. I mean, putting both cars again on the top, it's not easy. And that's to see how much effort everyone putting on here. And it was great. I mean, the whole race was really strong, really tough. And I was kind of on the beginning because it rained this morning, and the rubber that we had yesterday, my car was kind of set up for that situation, and I got a lot of oversteer in the beginning. But after that, the track is getting great. My car was settled out a little bit, and all of a sudden, turns to be a great car, special towards the end of the race. So I just have to thank the team. And when Gilles was right behind him, they were saying, okay, pit this lap because of the traffic. We're going to pit one lap early, and I saw the traffic in front of him, but I'm still kind of far away. So I turned, and the last minute, actually the last turn, he started turning in. I decided, I said, no, I'm going to continue and do one more lap. And there was silence in the radio. I was like, oh, Jesus, I think, gosh. You know, and I keep going. I saw in the mirror, I mean, everything was fine, but you never know. This computer is always, you know, numbers different than... And all of a sudden, when the fuel alarm came on, only almost coming to the pits, I was like, okay, I'm safe. And definitely was crucial for the lead. And when I go back in front of the Gio and probably a couple of guys. So in that particular point, that's it. My car was great. I knew I was just to take it easy. And when I started opening a little gap, you know, about 5 seconds, 4.8 or something like that, was pretty good because I was saving fuel. And I was like, come on, guys, can I go? Because I'm getting tired here to save fuel. And they're like, all right. So when I crank it up, fuel was like still doing the same lap time. I said, all right, guys, I'm going to go back. You know, so, the yellow flag came on. And that was kind of, I was upset because I had a fairly amount of a lead. But my car was strong every time with the restart and everything. So, I have no trouble, of course. I was a little concerned with you, just in case that he was putting pressure. And but sometimes I like that, you know, because I'm just trying to not go over the limit. And for me, it was great. You're right. I mean, on the championship definitely helps a lot. But still a lot of race to come, you know. So we just have to keep working like we did this weekend to make sure that we lead the last the last round on the series.
Meanwhile, Gilles Deferrin jumps up two places in the championship into third, something that makes his day seem worthwhile.
For sure, it was a great race, both for me and for Elio. I think we were very closely matched, and you know, unfortunately, I got a little bit of the traffic on the way out of the pits there on my first stop, and obviously he went a lot longer as well. So, you know, we lost the position there. And then, you know, I mean, we were really, really tied together. So, you know, I wasn't strong enough to challenge him or overtake him on the racetrack. I mean, we were, you know, a tenth or two apart. You know, sometimes I'll be a bit better, sometimes you'll be a bit better, and then I make a little mistake, you pull away. I make a little mistake, I'll catch him up. You know, it was a really hard pace, actually. We drove, certainly I drove hard all day, I don't know about you. But it was a great race for us, and certainly, you know, second place, not a win, but nevertheless, I think it's important for us to score these points and not go home empty-handed.
For the third race in a row, Patrick Carpentier appeared on the podium, finishing third. If you count Alex Tagliani's runner-up result in Toronto last month, that's actually four players' team podium finishes in as many races.
Yeah, no, it was great. I'm very happy. Feels like yesterday a little bit with these guys, but the team did a fantastic job. My car was really loose at the beginning of the race. Went off in corner one, and Dario joined me in the off-track excursion and came out ahead of me, and I couldn't pass him after that. He was very fast, and towards the end of the race, we just stayed there with these guys, and at the end of the race, my guys did a fantastic job in the pit line and got me back in third place, and we stayed there till the end, so it was fantastic.
Here's how they finished at the Miller Lite 200 at Mid-Ohio. Your winner was Elio Castroneves over Gilles Deferrin. Patrick Carpentier, Paul Tracy, and Tony Kanaan round out the top five. Then it was Roberto Moreno, Alex Tagliani, Christian Fittipaldi, Aurel Servia, and Cristiano D'Amata finishing through the top 10. 11 through 15, Memo Gidley, Scott Dixon, Bruno Junqueira, Mauricio Gugelin, and Max Wilson. 16th through 20th, Dario Franchitti, Michelle Jourdain Jr., Shinji Nakano, Alex Zanardi, and Kenny Brack. Toru Takagi finished in 21st place. Meanwhile, Adrian Fernandez in 22nd had a scary moment when his brakes failed and his throttle appeared to get stuck under his foot as he went off in turn 4 and nearly cleared the tire barrier at the edge of the gravel trap. He was, of course, uninjured, but it was indeed a scary moment. Jimmy Vassar finishes 23rd, Max Pappas 24th, and rounding out the 26th car field, Brian Herta and Michael Andretti. The time of the race, 1 hour, 44 minutes, 54.931 seconds for an average speed of 106.627 miles an hour. The margin of victory, 1.568 seconds. Despite finishing in 20th place, three laps down, the result of yet another bit of contact from his likely to soon be ex-teammate Max Pappas, Kenny Brack maintains a slim 1-point lead in the championship over Elio Castroneves, 104-103. Gilles Deferrin is now third with 89, Dario Franchitti drops to fourth with 81, and Michael Andretti is fifth with 73 points. Next up for the FedEx Championship Series, we head to the beautiful and classic Road America Road Course at Elkhart Lake, Wisconsin. Each week, the Honda Champ Car Update brings you the latest news from the world of karts, straight from the track and directly from the driver's mouth. This internet experience is brought to you by the folks at Honda. Racing is part of who Honda is, and you can see that by visiting www.hondaracing.com.
So let's stick to the wonderful world of kart, where this weekend they're back in action at Elkhart Lake in Wisconsin, where it's Kenny Brack of Team Rahal who cut loose a spectacular lap on a damp racetrack in the waning moments of qualifying to capture his fifth FedEx Championship Series pole position of the season. And during qualifying for the Motorola 220 at Road America, and as we just heard, it is one of the classic racetracks, one of the real road circuits that the kart championship runs on. And it was with barely enough time for an outlap and a flyer following a red flag to retrieve the stalled car of Dario Franchitti, Brack put together a lap of 117.969 miles per hour
on the 4.048 mile road course to claim top starting position for Sunday's 14th round out of the 21 rounds in the 2001 FedEx Championship Series. That single championship point that Bracken earns for his series high fifth pole position of the season gives him a 2-point margin over Helio Castroneves of Team Penske in the battle for the championship this year. Castroneves qualified sixth for the race that will be running tonight. Now, Saturday's speeds were considerably slower than those recorded during testing on Friday when defending FedEx Championships champion Jill DeFerrin from Team Penske topped the charts at 144 miles per hour. The Road America layout was soaked by rain approximately an hour before qualifying, and intermittent showers played a role throughout the hour-long session, for which the drivers are divided into two groups. Until the final group took its final lap, it appeared as though pole sitter was going to be Mimmo Gidley from their target Chip Ganassi Racing, who was in line for his first ever career FedEx Championship pole position. Following the early qualifying group at an average speed of 114.86 miles per hour. But following the retrieval of Franchitti, and with barely 2 minutes remaining in the qualifying session, seven drivers from the second group bettered Gidley's speed, led by Brack, whose pole was his first on a road or street course since the season opener in Mexico. So joining Brack on the front row was Alex Tagliani from Players Foresight Racing, who recorded a lap of 117.832 miles per hour. It marks his career best start on a road or street course also, exceeding his third there last year. Starting from third position is rookie Scott Dixon in the PacWest Racing Group, and he will make a season and career best start in that third position. Jill DeFerrin qualified fourth at 116.667 miles per hour, followed by Cristiano D'Amata in the Newman Haas Racing, and he was fifth. And the defending Motorola 220 champion from last year, Paul Tracy, is quite a disappointing 24th at 109 miles per hour. In other news from the world of the FedEx Championship, Kenny Brack has signed a contract for next season with Target Team Ganassi. Apparently there's quite a large pay rise involved, and that does put Kenny Brack in a very good position to continue his fine form in the kart series. It also gives him a start for the Indianapolis 500, a race that he has won in the past, and it also opens the door for potential NASCAR drives, because Ganassi Racing, of course, is quite broad across all of the three major series in the US. Also in kart, Dario Franchitti has announced an extension of 2 years with his contract with Team Green. That one sort of puts paid to Franchitti's dreams of Formula One, at least for 2 years. That's still seen as a dream for Franchitti, but you have to ask yourself whether he's leaving it just that little bit too late. Staying in the US, a couple of snippets from the world of NASCAR, where there's all sorts of speculation about what will be reported in NASCAR's investigation into the death of Dale Earnhardt. That happened back in February at the Daytona 500, and now all of the official reports are starting to be collated, and people are holding their breath to see what will exactly be attributed to the reason for that death. And so we'll just have to hold our breath. But related to that, Bill Simpson from Simpson Race Products, he has resigned from the company that he founded, and it's been... he has been at the forefront of the Dale Earnhardt death probe, with NASCAR at first blaming the death of the driver on the Simpson seatbelt that apparently separated. Since then, he received death threats and watched employees harassed, and he's quoted as saying, "I don't have any information, and I really don't know, I really didn't do anything wrong." So he's apparently quite distressed about the continuing harassment that he's been facing. And also some interesting news here from the Brickyard 400, and that's about TV ratings. They were up 68% over the 2000 event, and even eclipsed the inaugural race from 1994. So it just goes to prove that NASCAR continues its phenomenal growth, and I think it's a little bit of food for thought for Tony Cochran when he's boasting that the V8 supercars are the best touring car racing on the planet. I think he is ignoring NASCAR there at times, particularly with such growth figures like that. But sticking to V8 supercars for just 1 minute, next weekend will be the Queensland 500 up there near Ipswich. We'll be providing quite a detailed coverage of that race, and just some of the snippets of news in the lead up to that. We'll be looking for quite a few new cars debuting at that event. New cars are expected, firstly, for Craig Lowndes. That's one that we'll be holding our breath for, because they have apparently experienced a few delays in putting that together. So we'll wait and see whether that actually does appear for Craig Lowndes and Neil Crompton to race that one. New cars definitely will be delivered and raced for Mark Scaife and Jason Bright. They're teaming up, and it's really quite a risky approach in terms of the championship. There are big points on offer for the Queensland race, and the HRT have decided to put all their eggs in one basket. It's either going to be a fantastic, clever strategy to distance the first and second cars in this year's championship from the rest of the field, or it's going to be an awful silly one if the car doesn't finish and everyone gets a big jump on both the HRT drivers. Stone Brothers also have a new car that was unveiled for testing during the week, and we expect that one will be for Marcus Ambrose. Dick Johnson Racing, also a new car. And one that debuted last weekend at the Konica Round is from Prancing Horse Racing for Mark Noski and Craig Baird. And that's a team that's been very professional and successful in everything it's done in the past. So we're expecting some pretty big things from them as well, although they are playing down expectations, saying that they've got a lot to learn. But I don't expect them to be struggling for too long. Other V8 news has Mark Larkham and Wayne Gardner teaming up for the Queensland 500 and Bathurst. It looked as though Wayne Gardner was going to miss out on a drive for those events, but a deal's been put together there at the last minute, and it's quite interesting, particularly considering that Larkham still doesn't have a major sponsor on that car. So with Gardner in there as well, that should make it a bit more marketable. The Rat, Paul Radicic, has signed a two-year extension to his contract with Dick Johnson Racing, so looked forward to seeing more wonderful things from the Rat there. And it's also been rumoured for many, many months, going way back to the start of the year on the Craig Lowndes situation, about the emergence of a Brock super team. Peter Brock putting together his corporate connections and a lot of his knowledge to be put behind a race team to come out and really be a force. And we might see the start of that in the endurance racing and other races towards the end of the year. Starting off at the thin end of the wedge, and this is he's behind a team for James Brock, his son, who's been getting quite a bit of practice and experience through super touring ranks and other things. And they're putting together a team with, or jumping in with Imrie Motorsport. Now, that's actually a team where at Oran Park a few weeks ago, we saw their sign and we thought, hey, Inside Motorsport is actually there sponsoring a team. Big IMS logo on their pit equipment. Not quite, Imrie Motorsport. And they're the team that were fielding the car for Thomas Mazira earlier in the year. So, yes, a good team, but not a great team. They're still sort of middle of the pack. It'll be interesting to see what the Peter Perfect Touch can do to that team, and we'll see how they develop there. So that's it for V8 Supercars for the moment, and yes, we'll provide quite a detailed coverage next weekend from the Queensland 500.
Well, moving to the other extreme, of course, which is the British Touring Car Championship, where things have been going on there. Last weekend they were running at the Croft Circuit, and there it was Ivan Muller who's retaken the championship lead in sharing a pair of race wins. In the short sprint race, it was his arch title rival Jason Plato who was the winner there, but then in the feature race it was Ivan Muller who was the winner. It was actually a wet feature race, which was a bit of a stop-start event. As it was, Muller took over the lead from James Thompson after the Yorkshireman was delayed in the pit stops with a sticking front wheel, and maintained his concentration through a series of safety car periods to win from his teammate Plato and Thompson. As it was, the other Vauxhall driver, Phil Bennett, was in the news with a series of incidents running into about everybody and anybody who was in the field, including Tim Harvey, Steve Soper, Thomas Ertis and Tom Ferrier. So, as a result, Bennett has been banned for the next race. At
Thomas Edison?
No.
I thought you said Thomas Edison.
No, Thomas Erdos.
Oh, okay.
He's a Lexus driver in the British Touring Car Championship, but there's Phil Bennett. He's been banned from the sprint race at Alton Park, and as a result, he's actually been pulled from the entire meeting by Vauxhall. As I said, useless for them to take him there. The other racing, of course, overseas last weekend was the DTM, the German Touring Car Championship, and there it was Mercedes once again. In the short qualifying sprint race, it was Uwe Alzen who headed a Mercedes 1-2-3-4 after early misfortune for Alain Menu's Opel. And as it was, starting from pole, Alzen headed his Warstein AMG teammate Marcel Fassler into the first turn, and wasn't headed from there, the two of them finishing 1-2 with Bernd Schneider third and Peter Dumbreck fourth. In the longer feature race, it was Peter Dumbreck, the Scotsman, who took the first DTM win for a British-based driver since Dario Franchitti won back in the days of the ITC. So from fourth on the grid, he played a fairly canny game into the first corner, stayed in the normal racing line, and swept around the outside of his teammates to grab second, and then he was one of the first people into the pits and took over to win the race. So it was Peter Dumbreck winning from Bernd Schneider. Schneider basically has really got that championship sewn up once again with Matthias Ekstrom in the Audi finishing third. Other interesting news this week is in terms of the World Rally Championship, and there they've given the idea that driver choice seedings will be given a trial on this year's Rally Australia. And as a result, drivers will be able to choose where they start within the seeding, and they'll have none of the tactics of last year where drivers were sort of having slow down sections where they'd sort of drive slower for a while to try and throw the opposition off guard. So this year, something they're trying, another one of the things that the World Rally Championship organisers are working into, and we'll see how that works out. It's something they're, you know, planning to try in Rally Australia and see how it goes for the future.
I think it's one of the most sensible plans that they've had in ages. The car at the front, who is the fastest car, should probably, in my view, have the best road conditions that he thinks he can get. And if that's a case of I want to be third car, then I reckon this is going to be a good thing for rallying. The only thing bad about rallying is that you could find that it ends up, Peter, it ends up meaning that the leader continues to drive off into the sunset, whereas at the moment it's been a leveller when you've had to go on the sandiest and rockiest roads and been the fastest car in the previous days.
Yes, that's right. That's particularly important for the first day of the rally, because the positions will be allocated by the championship. So because you're leading the championship, all of a sudden you get a head start by picking the road conditions that you want. And those cars that have been struggling in the championship will be relegated to having the poor road conditions. Mind you, I think it is a step forward, because it was a bit farcical what we saw there last year, and it's also happened in some of the other rallies around the world. And I think it really is a thumbs up for Australian ingenuity. It's a system that they had at Rally Australia a few years ago, where the top six cars could pick what position they wanted. And it was really the international rules that made them stop doing that, and that's why we saw the silly tactics. I think it's a step forward, but you're right, it does mean that it could be a bit of a problem for the other cars to overcome that handicap, but well, that's the way it goes.
You were enjoying some rallying over the weekend, and I think we possibly should just localise this a little bit for the moment, because it has been a pretty tough couple of seasons for Canberra rally fans.
Yes, there hasn't been a lot of rally action in the local area. The ACT Regional Rally Series seemed to be having more and more rounds that were more distant, but still in the region. And it's good to see some more local rallies popping up. This weekend was a rally that was based really at Captain's Flat. And unfortunately, I don't have any results for that one, because I was doing a road closure out in the middle of Cowan Forest, up on a very cold and windswept hilltop. But yes, it's good to get involved in the local rallying again, sort of keep an eye on how that develops, and who knows, I may actually get a car again one of these days. Everyone keeps asking me, what are your plans for your new car? Well, it's more of dreams at this stage, but we'll see what happens there.
The man also keeps dreaming for his lotto win. But moving from rallying to open wheeler racing, of course, one of the Australians racing overseas in the British Formula 3 Championship is young James Courtney. And their next race this weekend is at Knockhill, which is also in a cold and miserable place in Scotland. Usually probably the sort of conditions we're suffering in weather-wise in Canberra is best known for Knockhill. But as it was, the qualifying session for the last round of British Formula 3 Championship was up at Knockhill, and they apparently had some sessions marked by a lot of yellow flags as a result, which stopped people getting into a bit of a swing of things. As it was, James Courtney had a fairly good day. He's qualified third for the first race in his Jaguar Racing Dallara Mugen behind Andy Preo and Takuma Sato. And in the second race, he's qualified fourth behind Anthony Davidson, Preo and Sato again. And he's hoping, obviously, for some good results out of that. Also, quickly returning to the British Touring Car Championship, the new MG that is going to be racing in the British Touring Car Championship had its first shakedown last week at the Pembrey Race Circuit in Wales. Despite torrential rain on the first scheduled day of running on the Wednesday, the West Surrey Racing Team managed a full day on Thursday with the Lola-built ZS-EX259 machine. And it's a brand new car out of the box, and apparently the results were very good. The chief engineer, Frank Durney, was very happy with the results they had, and the driver, Anthony Reid, said that culturally it's a different car to what I've driven over the last few years, but it has all the ingredients of being a great race car. It is taut, responsive and consistent. I'm really pleased. The team is scheduled to make its British Touring Car Championship debut at Silverstone on September the 9th and will contest the last six rounds of the series. So MG, another great name. They've been back with Le Mans. They're even talking, I think, about possibly even getting back into rallying with one of the 1600 kit cars as well. So MG making big comebacks into motor racing around the world.
It certainly is. Now, I don't know, did you mention that, it does look like Jeff Gordon is going to sneak his way into another victory in the NASCAR series?
Well, it's still pretty close there in the Winston Cup Championship. Dale Jarrett does seem to be tripping over himself the last couple of rounds, and he keeps giving Gordon a bit more of a head start. For much of the year, they were going neck and neck. But you're right, Craig, Gordon is starting to slip out into the distance. And particularly if you look at some of the statistics of the number of laps led, you know, some of these other guys who are contenders in the championship, they've led a couple of hundred laps, whereas Gordon is, you know, five or six times their score in laps led. And if you're consistently out at the front, you're going to consistently win races or at least bag top five positions. And yeah, Jeff Gordon is very well placed for this year's championship.
Yeah, with a win, two wins and a third place today in the V8 Brutes at Eastern Creek. Gary Young, Gary, a good result for you and the team today.
Yeah, no, it was a good result. I probably didn't do too well in practice, and it was good to get a good result today. It was great.
Mm. Now, of course, the V8 Brutes has been a series where a lot of people have been learning on the run. So this is the first time with the Brutes at Eastern Creek. No doubt a bit of a guess on the setup.
Oh, it certainly was. We played around with tyre pressures and things like that on Friday and Saturday, and you know, we had some problems with understeering sort of all through the weekend, but you know, it all came together today. So, yeah, no, they're a handful around Eastern Creek, that's for sure.
Now, obviously, with the Holden you're running, you've got a fair bit of opposition there from other Holden runners, but also the Falcons as well.
Look, I think that personally that the Falcons seem to suit Eastern Creek better than the Holden this weekend. I mean, even though we had a three Holden wins. But, no, it's very close. If you look at the lap times, there's only tenths in it between Holden and Ford. So, no, it's very close racing.
For yourself, getting involved with a new series like the V8 Brutes and then to be able to come out and take some race wins must be very good for yourself and the team.
Oh, it is great. You know, we've got a good team behind us and, we've been working hard to get some good results to two Pirelli cars were on the podium this afternoon, so that was great.
Of course, the other Pirelli car with the Pirelli tyres is that of Rod Wilson. Of course, he's the Pirelli man himself.
He is, yes, yeah. I suppose we've got a little bit of data on the tyres, but no, there's some good drivers out there, so it's very close, and we're having a ball.
Now, the next race meeting, of course, is at Sandown, which, again, is a different sort of circuit compared to Eastern Creek and some of the other circuits you've been to before. Have you ever raced at Sandown before?
No, I've actually never raced at Sandown, so it's I think it's going to be a bit of a learning curve there too. So I've had a bit of a drive around there, but nothing in anger. So we'll see how we go down there.
In terms of the Holden Ute that you are running in the series, do you reckon there's much development for yourself and the team to get it up to a little bit faster pace?
Look, I think it's pretty well controlled. It's just getting used to the car. But at every race meeting, it's all a little different. So. Yeah, I think that, there's always room for improvement. You're always learning, and, I try to ask questions to other race drivers about different tracks and different setups and different type of cars. So, yeah, no, look, we're always hoping to improve.
Before you joined in with the V8 Brutes category, what was your racing background?
I've done a little bit of club sprints and the Grand Prix rallies, and I did the Mirage Series for the last, Mitsubishi Mirage Series for the last 2 years. And I learned a fair bit out from the guys there too. It was a terrific series.
Must be a bit of a shock when you move from the horsepower that's in the Mitsubishi Mirages to that of the V8 Holden Ute.
Oh, certainly, it's it was definitely a learning curve, and but I think it, you know, racing, any sort of racing, is just the competition makes you a little harder. So I think that was what held me in good stead.
Well, Gary, congratulations on your two wins and third place today at Eastern Creek, and no doubt we'll try and see how you go at Sandown in a few weeks' time.
Fingers crossed we have another good result.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Gary Young joining us there on the line. I had an opportunity a few moments ago to catch up with Paul Stokel, and I asked him about the racing today. He had two wins and a second place behind one of the Vipers. In his two wins, he was chased hard by the Vipers of Morgan and also Darcy Russell all day. And I said, perhaps they've got this parity thing pretty close to the mark.
Yeah, it's a hard one. I mean, I can understand their point of view. I mean, we obviously feel hard done by every time we cop a penalty, and for every race we go to, we seem to get more penalties. So the Viper at the moment, it's hard to say, but they've certainly got the legs on all cars out there, including us. So maybe there's some parity issues to discuss there. And the Porsches, I mean, I don't know, it's hard to swell up in the Vipers and the Ferraris down to the Porsches. I think the Porsches maybe need some help to try and come up to speed a little bit more on tracks like this. But then again, it's a tighter circuit, Iron Park and IndyCar, they're certainly going to be on the pace again, so we'll probably be crying the other way, so it's a very difficult thing to do.
Now, for yourself, obviously, with race wins in Heat 2 and Heat 3, you wouldn't be upset by the reverse grid scheme?
No, done well at the reverse grid so far, and it was lack of good management, but we put ourselves in the right place at the right time. Like, the first corner was good to me this time. I was a fairly packed grid as we got into the first corner, and everything just, the gaps seemed to appear, and I ended up in fifth after the first lap, so it made the rest of my race relatively easy, I guess, because there was Porsches in front of me, and I had the legs on them when I got the brakes. So yeah, I'm not certainly a good entertainment, I guess, and it's always good if you can come from the back.
What about for the next meeting in the Procar schedule, which, of course, is, I think, a trip down to Sandown?
Yeah, we went not far away from our home. Well, it is our home track. In a way, it's the only Melbourne race we do this year, apart from the Grand Prix. Yeah, looking forward to it. It's again, long straights and up the hill, up the back, should suit our car. And the 500 doesn't count for points, but it's certainly going to be a challenge of different proportions, and we're looking forward to it.
Who are you teaming up with for the 500?
It's not confirmed yet. We're still talking to a couple of people, but it'll be a V8 supercar driver and probably a very high-profile one as well. So we'll look forward to that announcement fairly shortly.
And, of course, for the team, you were mooting to get together and have a second Diablo in the field. What happened there? It didn't get ready in time?
No, we were hoping to, but there's a lot of work to do as far as the roll cage and everything like that was concerned, and in the end it just wasn't possible to get it done in time. Obviously, the more competitive cars we can have out there helps us in the championship, because we're playing catch-up to Jim Richards, and any cars between him and us obviously taking points away from him and is a benefit to us. So we're keen to get another Diablo in there and try and get some more cars between him and us.
What about the Malaysian race? What are your and the team's plans about that one?
I don't know. Sounds great. I'm looking forward to it. To race at a circuit like that, a Grand Prix circuit, it would be awesome, I think, in a car like ours. Yeah, we're lucky to have that opportunity, and we can't wait, really. I guess the hardest bit is just the schedule, trying to get backwards and forwards and then plan that last round, because it doesn't leave a lot of time, but I'm sure we'll work our way around it.
And, of course, Eastern Creek, the third of the Procar standalone meetings, and Eastern Creek, traditionally, the hardest track to get anyone out to watch at.
Yeah, the crowd was a little bit disappointing. I'm not sure how many people there were here. I wouldn't have a clue, but there was certainly less than our other rounds. And as you say, Eastern Creek is very difficult, and I think they knew that coming into this round, which is a bit disappointing, because the racing today was good in nearly all the categories. So I think whoever missed out, they missed out on some good racing.
Well, Paul, congratulations on your two wins today, and more important points coming your way in that all-important Maguire's Drivers' Championship in the Megamandis.com Nations Cup Series.
Yeah, not a problem. Thanks very much.
Well, Jeff Morgan with the Monster.com Chrysler Viper GDS, a breakthrough for you today with your first race win in a round of the Megamandis.com Australian Nations Cup Championship.
Yeah, we're very excited about getting our first win. The team's worked very hard since January last year. So I suppose when you look at that, 12 months plus 8 for August is 20 months of hard work.
Now, for yourself and the team, it's actually a fairly good day's racing. A first place, a second place and a third place. So some more good results and good points.
Yeah, Cyril, I think it's now sort of the goals that Procar have set for Nations Cup are starting to be realised with a variety of makes up the front, which is great. And I think the racing's very tight. I don't think we'll get too many races that are tighter than what we had today.
In terms of the win there at Eastern Creek, do you feel that Eastern Creek was a circuit that did suit the Viper?
Oh, well, it's the best circuit other than Bathurst for the Viper, I'd say. It's certainly where we're going to shine the most, and it's also our home track. It's where we do all our testing, so we expected to do very well, and probably expected that we might have actually had a couple of wins, but anyway, that wasn't to be, and the other guys drove very well. And we sort of hope the Monster Viper can do something a bit better, another step up the rung in Sandown.
Mm. Now, of course, one of the people you were fighting quite fiercely with, particularly in the second race, you finished third behind, was the other Viper of Darcy Russell. So the Vipers were certainly having their day at Eastern Creek.
Yeah, well, that's right. I mean, Darcy wasn't on the pace at the beginning of the weekend, but certainly by the end of the weekend he was right there. And I think he's, you know, it's quite a tricky circuit, Eastern Creek, and I certainly think he's learned his lines by following people like Bitsy and Jimmy and Paul and myself around, and Mark Noski. He's been able to sort of speed up his learning curve, which is great.
In terms of the next round, which is at Sandown, one of the big issues for the Vipers, of course, is that of the number of fuel stops you'll need to make. Has anything been resolved with that yet at all?
No, nothing's changing, unfortunately, and that means that we have to make five stops. And with the sort of wheel configuration we've got and the five stops, it makes it really uncompetitive for the event.
So that, of course, so it really puts you on the back foot to start with.
It does, yeah, and it's a very expensive event, and to go and throw $50,000 at an event just to be there is a bit tough.
Have they talked about at Procar perhaps having some competition yellows so you wouldn't be caught pitting under green all the time? You could pit under yellow, and that might even mean that the other cars will pit at the same time.
Yeah, well, we used to be able to pit in pace cars, but as you know, the rules and regulations now have changed, and you can't use one of your mandatory pit stops in a pace car. If that rule had been there, we probably would have had a chance to complete our stops, because we know there's going to be pace cars with a number of cars running. But with Porsche's making three stops, and the Lambo with a 100-litre fuel tank and one nut on its wheels, I mean, we're just not competitive.
The thing is, you're going to lose so much time in the pits, it's going to be very hard to make it up on the track.
Yeah, and I think the feeling from the management was that the Vipers would be quick enough, but we're not quick enough to get a lap on the whole field, you know, a couple of times. It just is not there, as we saw today.
Now, later in the year, of course, there's talk of the Procar teams from Nations Cup supporting the American Le Mans Series race up in Malaysia. Any plans to take the Viper up there and let it loose on the Formula One circuit?
Yeah, that would be a great circuit for the Viper. It's just a matter of logistics of getting it up there, and it's right between two championship races. So if anything happened, we'd be threatening our championship, which the next race, like 10 days after the car gets back or even less from Malaysia, is Oran Park.
Mm. Now, in terms of that final race, Oran Park, do you think there'd be another circuit that would suit the Viper with the main long straight there?
Yeah, it could suit us, but there's a lot of... The problem with the Viper is when you have change of direction, and the long circuit at Oran Park has quite a lot of change of direction. And it'll just be a matter of understanding how well the other cars go there. I would expect we might struggle there.
Well, Jeff, congratulations on your first race win there at Eastern Creek today with the Viper, and no doubt people in the team got their fingers crossed and working hard to get some more.
Yeah, well, I've got a great team. Barry Jones and the boys are probably one of the best teams in the business, and they'll be doing everything they can to get us another couple of wins down at Sandown. We've only got one race down there other than the... So we want to win that one. That's our next goal.
Well, Jeff, congratulations for today, and we'll catch up with you then.
Thank you for calling.
At Eastern Creek, of course, the Class D cars out on the circuit, and Darryl Coon has done it again. Two wins from two starts in the Class D category, and Darryl, that Ford just really does keep on keeping on.
Yeah, well, it's a good car, and we've obviously worked very hard with its development. But this win really did come as a bit of a surprise to us. Only a couple of weeks ago, we had a huge rev limit penalty put to us, which really slowed the car down a lot. It was a little bit like driving around with a soccer ball under the throttle cable. But we managed to overcome that and managed to come away with a win.
You've been a giant killer in that car, though. John McIntyre's, his V8 Falcon, was having trouble with you on some of the tighter courses.
Yeah, well, we've certainly been working very hard on the car's chassis, and I really think that's where most of the gains come from. I mean, we don't have a lot of horsepower to play with. We're just able to get the power that we have down to the ground and maintain our mid-corner speed, which then sets us up on the main straights and the like, which obviously gives us the performance that we need.
Now, I've been looking at the forums on the Procar website at www.procar.com.au, and I've noticed that there has been a lot of criticism from Holden fans that they haven't put a Holden V6 up against your Falcon 6 just so they can have that battle. I guess as a Ford man, you'd love to be beating on a Holden like you're beating on the rest of the class.
Well, yeah, I'm in favour. I mean, bring them on. It would be great to have all the marks represented in the class. It is the only real class in Australia where all the Australian manufacturers can get together and show their wares off. It would just be great if someone was that way inclined, that maybe a Holden fan who would like to put a car on the track and see how they go.
It doesn't cost the earth like a supercar, does it?
Well, that's one of the great things about this class is we are talking about a family-grown production car. All the parts are available through Ford Spare Parts. You can go to your local Ford dealer or Peter Warren Ford and buy a car. We're not talking a lot of money to get involved, and the running costs are nowhere near what a supercar or a lot of other high-performance cars will cost.
Now, for yourself, what plans do you have? Are you going to be running the 500 at Sandown?
Not at this stage. At this stage, we're just going to focus on the see what, if we can pull the championship off. And then later on at Bathurst, we're looking at some things in that may actually see us running a V8 Falcon at Bathurst.
Now, up at Queensland Raceway, Robert Chadwick in the Mitsubishi Magna was certainly doing everything right. For yourself today, beating Chadwick in the Magna is a big boost in the points.
I guess any time that you can finish in front, it does help your point score. At Ipswich, we really were struggling with the rev limit that was imposed on us. So, unfortunately, I didn't think it was really indicative of the performance that we could expect out of our XR6. But at Eastern Creek, certainly the Camry and the Magna were able to put on a very good show, and I don't think they were disgraced at all. We were probably a little bit lucky in the first race when there was a big incident at Turn 1, and I think it was the Magna that got very out of shape, which actually then made the Camry slow down a little bit and give us the buffer that we needed.
Well, luck's a fortune in any sort of sport, and particularly in motor racing. Daryl Coon, congratulations. I know all the Blue Oval fans in this room are cheering for you right now.
All right, well, thanks very much for that. I'd just like to send a quick thank you to Peter Warren Ford, who helped us out over the weekend, and MDC Industrial Supplies and Building Concepts. Their help was fantastic. We're a bit unlucky on Thursday night because their marquee got blown away, and they were able to swing around and help us and give us a bit of shape for the weekend, which was fantastic.
Well, that's what motor racing is all about, people helping people.
Yeah, it certainly is, and it's great to be able to thank them when you get the opportunity to.
Daryl Coon, it's been a pleasure as always.
Thanks very much, and any time.
Yeah, well, in that class there at Eastern Creek in the 2001 Century Batteries Australian Jetty Production Car Championship, if we look, there's actually three classes running in that particular group of races. In the first race, of course, Scott Lodesman was the winner in Class C and the outright race winner. Daryl Coon was the winner in Class D in both races, as was Scott Lodesman in Class C. And in Class E, which is the smaller cars, it was David Russell in the Proton Sectra GTI from the Caltex Javelin Racing Team, who was the winner in the first race for them. And for the second race, it was Luke Yeldon in the Holden Astra SRI who was the winner there. Rick Bates from Canberra was running in a Daihatsu Sirian. He finished down in 11th and third last in class in the first race, and second last outright, and second last in class in the second race. Obviously, things are not going well for the Mighty Daihatsu today.
You have such a nice way of putting how he ran. Most people would say he finished sixth and seventh, but third last, second last. Don't be harsh. Neil Bates was actually running in Nations Cup too, but we should do a consolidated run of the results, and I'll let you continue.
Yes, all those results in the Australian GT Production Car Championship in the GT Performance class, two races there. John Bowe, the winner in both races in the Ford Mustang Cobra for the Bud Racing team from Brett Peters in the Subaru WRX STI. Apparently, Bob Pearson was giving John Bowe quite a run for his money and actually was leading the first race, but apparently coming around onto turn one, accidentally hit the electronics kill switch. And as I say, the wick went out, and there was a bit of a hurried gather-up, and eventually he finished in third for that race.
That was an RX-7, so you'd say the oven light turned off.
Okay. And in the second race, he apparently had a few problems there as well, so things didn't go as he wanted for Bob Pearson there. So also in that, the other Class B, both races was Nathan Pilkington in the Mitsubishi FTO V6, who was the winner in Class B. He was the winner over Nathan Thomas in the Honda Integra Type R. Our own man from Canberra, of course, as you mentioned earlier on, was Neil Bates, who's running in the GT Nations Cup class. And he was actually guest appearance in a Porsche GT3. Now, as we heard, the race results there were in the first race was Jeff Morgan in the Monster.com Chrysler Viper was the winner over the Lamborghini Diablo of Paul Soquel, with Mark Noski finishing third in the Ferrari 360 for the Prancing Horse Racing team. Jim Richards finished down in fifth, and Neil Bates finished in eighth in the Techno Autosport Porsche GT3. In the second race, it was Paul Soquel in the Lamborghini Diablo, winning from Darcy Russell in the Chrysler Viper, then Jeff Morgan, then Mark Noski, Peter Fitzgerald, Dominic Beninca, Jim Richards finishing down in 7th, which is unusual for him, and Neil Bates finishing 8th in the Techno Autosport Porsche GT3. Seems he's found himself a little spot there to finish. And in the final race of the day was Paul Soquel in the Lamborghini Diablo, from Jeff Morgan in the Chrysler Viper, Darcy Russell, then Mark Noski, Jim Richards back up to 5th, Dominic Beninca in 6th, Peter Fitzgerald 7th, and Neil Bates in 8th. So, and actually quite a lot of DNS for the other Prancing Horse Racing Ferraris there, including those of Mar Aldagri and Sam Newman. I wonder what those boys were doing.
All right, so our attention for the Pro Car Series turns to the Sandown 500 now, which is going to be a very interesting affair, and of course, that one not to be missed. I think Channel 10 is actually going to be showing it live, because John Davison does have a contract, which I think hasn't expired yet with Channel 10, even though he doesn't have a race.
That's very handy, isn't it?
Mm.
Other news as well, they ran a round of the Australian Formula 3 Championship at Eastern Creek today, two races there. In the first race, it was Peter Hackett from Team Cactus Communications, who was the winner from Mike Bealey and Darren Palmer. In the second race, it was Damon Templeman from Darren Palmer, and then Peter Hackett running third. So, Formula 3. Actually, interesting to see that Formula 3 Championship is actually starting to pick up more people realising the advantages of doing a domestic Formula 3 Championship, because it is translatable to anywhere else in the world.
It also has some restrictions on it, that you can't run cars newer than about 98, and then they split off into three categories underneath that by year models. So it means that you can't have one team, i.e. you can't have Brana go out and buy two 2001 chassis and come in and blow your championship away. The earliest model car you can run, I think, is about a 98 car. Mm. So it does keep the costs down.
Yeah, that seems to be a fairly intelligent way of going about the open wheeler racing in Australia. We know that at the moment Formula Holden is struggling to get a good field of cars.
Well, Formula Ford is struggling too, but there's just so many of them. When you take them to a meeting, you can get so many New South Wales state cars into the field, it doesn't look like you have lost any. But the actual national competitors is dwindling every year.
Yeah, for the young upcoming drivers who do want to go to Europe, Formula 3, they'd have to stop and think about that because of the applicability of the rules and the experience, even though it is the slightly older car, whereas Formula Holden being a little bit specialised for Australia, you have to ask a few questions there. Well, one driver who had some fun and games at Eastern Creek today was Tim Lay, who was run over by the V8 Commodore of Morecambe.
It's a good ad for your Volkswagen, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's turned into a speed hump.
Well, it's almost literally apparently like one of those scenes you see from a certain insurance company ad where everything happens to him. And in this case, it certainly did. And we had a chance to catch up with Tim Lay and ask him about the accident.
I was basically just there for the ride, really. I mean, off the start, I got a reasonable start, and we were just cruising down the straight, and I think I just hit third gear and was about to change to fourth, and I got an almighty whack from behind. So it was sort of a little bit unpredictable, and next thing I was in the wall and around and in the wall again, and that was about it, really.
Mm. But to be run over by a V8 Commodore must have been a pretty frightening thing.
Well... It happened so quick, you haven't really got time. I mean, it wasn't all that frightening, but it was just more disappointment than anything. Because, you know, we qualified the car so well, but unfortunately we were halfway up the Class A grid, and we were at the, say, second half of the Class A grid, which were all the loose cannons were.
Mm. And, of course, for yourself, it's a difficult thing because in terms of that sports touring class, you were doing very well in it, and now it's really knocked your chance in the championship quite heavily.
Oh, yeah, I think it's the championship's over now. I mean, it was we were in pretty good running for it because obviously we were on pole and a couple of seconds quicker than anyone else. And we would have hosed the races in, but just something silly, so silly, and it's done so much damage. And unfortunately for Volkswagen, they had quite a few guests there today, and it was just a bit of a downer of a day.
In terms of the car, is it repairable, or is it going to be a case of finding the nearest dumpster for it?
I think it might be a dumpster. Actually, it's got quite a bit of damage, and the front rails are fairly badly bent. But I guess when they get it back to the workshop, they'll find out what they're going to do with it.
So a fair bit of work for the guys between now and the next race, which is at Sandown.
Oh, I think the boys will be busy. That's for sure.
Mm. Now, I know you've got a media car in the team. You couldn't have kicked that dud McKay out and taken over his car?
Oh, McKay, he was willing to get out. We were going to... I was going to drive his car, and they told us we could drive it, but all of a sudden they about an hour before the race, the second race, they said we couldn't drive it because of some regulation problem or something or other, but we were going to drive it, and then Pete got his drive back, so he's happy.
Mm. So the thing is, though, that basically by the time you get back to Sandown, at least you will have a car of some description to run in.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, all we can do now is concentrate on just winning a few more races and try and get more speed out of it. But like I say, I mean, the driving standard in the Class A pack is unbelievably bad. There's some pretty terrible drivers back there.
Yeah, okay. Well, Tim, hopefully things will go better for you at Sandown, and you'll be able to get a few more of those points you need for the championship.
Yeah, it'll be looking forward to it. It should be good fun.
Okay, thank you very much, Tim Lay.
Thanks, Craig.
Yeah, well, of course, next week we have the Queensland 500 from up at Queensland Raceway. Of course, the first of the long-distance races for the V8 teams with driver
really
pairings.
True. We've had long-distance races all season. It's only been three sprint races this year.
But it's long-distance racing, the fact that they actually have driver changes, refueling stops and the like. So,
well, they have refueling stops. They just don't need to have the refueling stops. Sorry, I'm being harsh. It's like me on Sunday Morning Sport, where I'm bagging rugby league in rugby league preview. So I'll let you to discuss that just quickly as we are about to wrap up and go to centre bounce.
Shall we leave him with stunned silence on our behalf?
I don't know. Well,
pick a winner.
It seems as though in that last interview, though, whenever someone was saying something controversial, the line drops out, isn't it? Goes quiet. And no, that is not actually rigged here at all. That just happens to be the hassles with mobile phones. My tip for next weekend... I hate to say it, but I think Scaife and Bright will be awfully strong teaming, but there'll be someone there on the sidelines doing voodoo curses and stuff, trying to make them fall over, but it's going to take quite a bit of that.
I have a sneaking suspicion that being closest thing to Dick Johnson's home circuit, that the Rat and Stephen Johnson might show some of that form they've been showing all season and come through, and it'll also be interesting to see how Cronson goes, getting his backside back in the seat rather than behind the microphone.
That's all for this week. Join us next week on Inside Motorsport.
Inside Motorsport is produced by Thunder Media in the studios of Triple SFM Canberra via Comrade Sat with the support of the Community Broadcasting Association of Australia.